Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, this is Nikki Desai, your host for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm sitting here again with our friend Karen Graham talking about issues in technology and nonprofits. And she has done quite a bit of work in the sector, as we discussed in the last episode. We're going to pick up sort of where we left off. Karen, you published something recently that we should probably talk about.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that. One of the things that Idealware is known for is conducting pretty in-depth, impartial research about technology for the nonprofit sector. And our April 2019 research paper is called Digital Skill Sets, an Imperative for Today's Nonprofit Leaders. It is, I'm actually looking at it right now, it's about 25 pages long. It covers things like, what are digital skill sets and why are they important? How is technology changing the way organizations work? And then what types of skills do executives need? And how does that provide an advantage to their organizations?
Interesting. I hope I get to read that. Can I download it off your website?
Yes. Yes, you can download that at idealware.org.
Good. I will definitely look for that. Thank you. And I want to talk about data maturity. You know, how does a nonprofit become a more data-informed organization? Karen, how do we start that conversation?
Well, I could start by telling you about some research that our organization has done on that and what we discovered. Is that a good place to begin?
Absolutely.
Great. Well, there's a white paper called Becoming a Data-Informed Organization that is available at idealware.org. It's a free download. And that is the culmination of some research that we did actually over about a six-year period, I think, beginning with a commissioned project where we were asked to look into how synagogues were using data and find out what we could understand about different levels of maturity there. Eventually, we thought, well, I wonder if the things we discovered about data maturity in synagogues could be generalized to the nonprofit sector as a whole. Or, you know, are those things also true about other kinds of organizations? And I guess not surprisingly, we found that yes, they were. But we did a bunch of research to update this in 2017. And based on that, introduced a maturity model that has several stages. It has five stages that sort of help people understand. I think the value of this is it helps people understand where they are now on this spectrum of data maturity. And by doing so, it helps them understand what they should do next and to not be surprised by some of the hurdles they might find along the way and be able to sort of focus on learning, like how do we just get from step two to step three rather than thinking we have to leap from step two to step five, which is really discouraging because it's almost impossible to do that. And so my hope is that by presenting this kind of spectrum model, that it gives organizations a more realistic and optimistic way to think about progress along that spectrum.
What is progress?
Well, let me talk about a couple of the stages, and then maybe you'll start to,
yes,
to visualize that. The first stage we talk about is, we call it getting started. And organizations at that level haven't reached the point where their data is used to make decisions at all. It's probably a mess. You know, maybe they have 300 Excel spreadsheets, but there's no one who really owns all of that. There is no strategy behind it. They're not collecting data in a deliberate and systematic way, and they probably don't trust their data. And so even if they do look at it, they'll say, well, the data seems to say that we should cancel this program and put more of our resources into this other program. But then the executive director says, well, but I've been working in this field for a long time, and my gut says that the program, the data's wrong. Like, this program is actually really effective. And so that sort of derails the whole ability for the organization to make any kind of data-informed decision, because somebody's always overruling it and they don't trust the data at all. So that's kind of what it looks like at the very beginning level.
Okay.
And then they'll go through different stages of experimentation and starting to establish more organization-wide practices. And then eventually some of them might reach this point, the stage five, which is called the data-centric organization. And that's where they're so fully immersed in data that it feels like kind of part of the DNA of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And their culture is really adapted around that. And so almost no decision is made without sort of checking to see whether the data supports it or what the data might, what guidance the data might provide.
In imagining a completely data-driven organization, is that a bad thing?
Is it a bad thing to have a completely data-driven organization?
Well, I mean, the reason I ask the question is because I know people put a lot of heart and soul into the good work that they do within their nonprofit sector. And I'm thinking that, you know, if I end up going completely data-driven, maybe that rips some of the humanity out of the effort.
Right. Well, and that's why I, even though we do use the term data-driven in the report, mm-hmm. I avoid using that term. I like to say data-centric or data-informed.
Ah.
And my favorite is data-informed, because what that says to me, and this is really the ideal in my mind, is that there are still humans that are making these decisions. It's not just automated. And we find that that's really important, because algorithms can make a lot of biased recommendations. If you feed biased information into them, then it's going to feed biased information back out, right?
Right, that's true.
So it really requires a human being to use their judgment and to ask those kind of critical questions about it.
Mm-hmm.
But just using judgment without any information is not a recipe for success.
Right.
So really, I think the ideal is that, like, data is always part of the discussion, but it is not being used without people's good judgment and intelligence being applied.
Yeah, well, that makes perfect sense. Do you have a case study on how this has worked for an organization that's worked its way through these levels of acceptance?
I can talk a little bit about our own organization.
Yeah.
Which can be, I don't know, that feels a little vulnerable to expose our dirty laundry, even though we write about this and we have expertise in it. I would say we are probably not at stage five of this model. We're probably in stage four, and we haven't always been there. Mm-hmm. We the organization started, Idealware started about 15 years ago, and Tech Impact started a little before that. And like any startup, we were kind of flying by the seat of our pants in a way,
mm-hmm.
at first, and just trying to figure out what was meaningful to us, and, you know, what sort of data should we even be collecting.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, I can speak more to Idealware because I've been affiliated with that part of the organization for much longer, and I know more of its history. I know that we did a lot of experimentation early on with use of different tools and collecting different data. And some of that we are now starting to cast aside because it's not serving us anymore.
Oh.
But that's okay. You know, mm-hmm. it's because this is something that you can't set up procedures and practices and technology systems once and have them last for 15 or 20 years without any changes.
Right.
Right? So that's actually kind of part of becoming more mature as an organization is being able to adapt to changing circumstances. So we're in a stage right now where we are making a lot of strategic decisions based on our data, but we are also making some changes to our data management systems and our practices in order to support that, because the legacy systems we had when we were a much smaller program are not meeting our needs anymore.
So things actually got better once you embraced the use of data. The operation of the organization was changed as a result for the better.
Right. Well, and I'll give you a really concrete example of how we do this.
Mm-hmm.
One of our program activities is providing training for nonprofit professionals. And when we offer an online course, we often have registration open for multiple courses at the same time. So we need to make decisions about which course we should feature in an upcoming email message. For example, we have a way of looking at not just how many people are registered for the courses, but also based on historical data. We have a spreadsheet that is fantastic that we can plug in how many people are registered today, what's today's date, what's the start date of the course, and then it makes a prediction on how many people will be registered at the start date. And so we can see really quickly whether we're on track for that particular course or not, and which ones are ahead and which ones are lagging. And that is tremendously helpful in helping us decide what level of promotion we should do for those courses.
That's amazing. So,
like that's one example of actually a relatively simple tool to use, but something that without that technology and without that information, we would just be making our best guess rather than having historical data to inform that.
Wow. I mean, that's just amazing, mind-blowing that you can get that level of predictability just by better using the data.
Right. And it's not always right, but it's actually sometimes pretty close.
Sure.
Yeah. Another example of how we use that in our training program is we look at the learning outcomes for our courses. So we have everyone who takes an Idealware course does a self-assessment at the beginning of the course about their knowledge and skills relating to that topic. And then they do a very similar assessment at the end, which actually asks them identical questions about their knowledge and skills. And then we measure how much they've improved. And we can use that to evaluate our program, but we can also use it to make decisions about, like, of the different instructors that have taught this course over time, which one is getting the best results and who should we invite back to teach it the next time? Things like that. Or, you know, if we experiment with maybe making a course a little bit longer or shorter or changing the content, then we have a way to measure how that affects the learning outcomes for people.
Right, of course. The upshot of all this is don't be afraid of the data. It's there anyway. Make it work for you.
Right.
So is there any nonprofit that you can think of that wouldn't really benefit from, you know, a data collection method?
If an organization is not prepared to use it, then there's no point in collecting it.
Right.
And I think that's one of the big mistakes that we see people make at the earlier stages of data maturity is, like, somebody gets so excited about collecting all sorts of data. And so they're keeping track of every little detail about their constituents, and what color is their hair and what's the name of their pet. And, like, all this, I mean, those are kind of ridiculous examples, but but seriously, some of the data that organizations collect, when you really think about it, is ridiculous because they have no way of using it. And so what they're doing then is creating extra work for people. They're taking information from their constituents that they have no real use for, which to me is maybe not even ethical.
Oh, interesting. That's a good point.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you can show a constituent that, like, we need this data from you, we need this personal information about you so that we can serve you better, then okay, fine. That seems fair to me. But if it's just for curiosity or we might use this someday, I don't know. I feel like that is a little bit questionable. And so that's how a lot of organizations start, though, with an enthusiast who wants to collect everything.
Right.
And then they clutter up their data management systems. And eventually they start to discover which data is actually meaningful for them and helps them to make better decisions. And then they'll start to pare it down.
That's interesting. So maybe do a quick study to determine what bits of information are really germane to the mission goals and just collect those.
Right. It reminds me of I saw a presentation recently by some people from Code for America who were talking about, it was an application for some kind of public benefit. Maybe it was SNAP benefits. I can't remember for sure what it was, but they redesigned the application form and got it down from maybe 20 some questions, which seemed kind of invasive and difficult for the applicant to fill out. And they narrowed it down to, I want to say, 3 questions. They made it much shorter, they made the process much shorter, and they were still able to make decisions about enrollment that were just as effective. I see the same thing with grant-making organizations. Sometimes they ask so many questions on the grant application, and then when they really take an honest look at it, they realize that they're not that information is not making any difference in their grant-making decision.
Right.
So then why Why ask it?
Why ask for it? Exactly. I'm evaluating a rubric right now for a local organization that wants to use it for a grant review process. And there's a couple things in there that I'm going to raise a flag on. I'm like, what does this have to do with the end goal? And so hopefully they will, you know, have either a good reason or be willing to remove it. Thank you, Karen. This is good. We're running out of time again. This is just information I think that is way too interesting. Hopefully we can do this again in the future and revisit some of these topics and maybe some new things. Would that be okay with you?
Sure.
And let's remind our listeners again, if they wanted to be in touch with you, how would they do that?
They could find my contact information and the report that we talked about at idealware.org.
Thank you. And to our listeners, you can find every single episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast at our website. That's nonprofitsnapcast.org. And if you want to join in on the conversation, just find us on Facebook. Search for Nonprofit Snapcast, and you'll be able to find our pages there. Karen, thanks again for joining us. This has been a really great conversation, and I really appreciate you being on the show with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.